Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate. I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
Good. We were just talking about how in Colorado, we are getting dumped on with snow. And Mark, you said your kids were supposed to be...
We were supposed to get a lot of snow today. It was supposed to be a lot of snow. And I'm looking out my window and there is nothing.
Yeah. My two-year-old says we're in a snow globe. Since you can't say that word right.
So, you know, I would love to, like, you know, where I'm at, I live in Pennsylvania, and where I'm at, some years we get lots and lots and lots of snow, and other years, like last year, I think we hardly got any at all. It's just kind of hit or miss.
Yep, same here. Our mountains need it though, so we're excited. Anyway, whatever the weather is doing where you guys are at, and especially for those in California, our prayers are with you and pray that everything goes well with the big storms there at this time. But today we're going to be talking about getting past negative emotions, which is something that you all asked for. So this is especially for those that feel like you're really stuck with a lot of negativity, anxiety, depression, anger, and you want to know how to get out of that. Before we get to that though, our client win of the week, this comes from a Reboot member of our relationship reboot program. And she's also done PATH, but she's asked to remain anonymous. So I'm just gonna call her S. She says, I haven't posted in quite a while. Hi, Heather and Mark. For those of you who are new and don't know me, I'm S. I'm 64, married 34 years to my king. I think it says it's a crown, so I'm thinking king. We struggled for many years since 2006 when our oldest was diagnosed with schizophrenia. This involved emotional estrangement, multiple separations, infidelity, and talk of divorce. When all seemed lost in 2018, I joined Relationship Reboot. It was a turning point for me. For the first time, I was able to see past my pain and comprehend his pain. Wow. PATH completely changed the trajectory of our marriage. Thank you, Heather and Mark, and thank you, Lord. And then this is at Christmas. So she says, I just wanted to share some Christmas hope with you all by posting some Christmas wins. 1 year ago, last Thursday, December 16th, my beloved came home for good. Praise God. 1 year ago, last Friday, December 17th, my prince put his ring back on. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus. He is the God of miracles. Falling in love all over again. It's a roller coaster ride of ups and downs and loop-de-loops. It's real and it takes my breath away, humbled and thankful. So she's done the work obviously for several years now, since, you know, 2018, joined the Relationship Reboot and then has been doing PATH as well and seeing progress. And like she says, it is a roller coaster, right? But she's definitely heading in the right direction. So great job, S, and thank you very much for sharing with everyone.
All right. So today's topic, getting past negative emotions. I think a lot of our clients are probably dealing with this. I think, you know, more what we're discussing though is getting past your own negative emotions rather than dealing with your spouse's negative emotions, right? And I can understand why a lot of our audience might struggle with something like that, especially if your partner might be expressing some doubt in the relationship, or if maybe they've even talked about divorce or leaving. That can be a really hard thing to deal with. And I know a lot of people don't take the time to stop and think. They say, okay, this is, it creates some anger or sadness or fear, anxiety. And it's difficult to get to put that down sometimes, right? So Heather, what do we have to talk about today in terms of all this?
Well, first, just give yourself some grace if you're feeling that, because it's very instinctual. We're going to go into the responses to stress which is the fight, flight, or freeze response. There's actually a fourth one, so we're going to share that with you a little bit later on. But what happens when we are in stress and we feel fear is that we activate the limbic system, and it puts us into the animalistic part of our brain, the fight, flight, or freeze response. And what happens in neuroscience and psychology, you can go look this up, but it almost completely reduces the blood flow to the reasoning part of our brain and puts us into that animalistic state. And so then we react from this fight, flight, or freeze place, which is not our best selves. When I learned, like when I first heard that the reasoning part of our brain is almost completely shut off when we're in fear or stress, that really hit me, because I want to be able to act from my best self and I want to be able to have reason, but it made sense. I was like, you're right. I really don't have reason when I'm in that much fear or that much stress. And so when we recognize that this is just like, there is conditioning to this, there's also just instinctual response that happens. And when we're aware that that response is going on, then we can, first of all, give ourselves some grace about it. And then second, be able to choose how to deal with that instinctual response in a way that better serves us. And so that's what we're going to kind of share today in a nutshell. So just being aware that that process is happening for me was empowering, because then I realized why I kept reacting the same way, or why it was so hard to act as like a better self or a more reasonable person until I learned that there are ways to, yeah, we had that instinct, right? It just kind of turns on, but then we can choose what we do from there. And then we can choose to get back away from the limbic system and get into the higher reasoning part of ourselves so we can make better empowered choices. So my first thought here though, is that knowing that it's all instinctual, right? These feelings are instinctual, but that we can still choose what we do about them. And also knowing that all emotion is good. For a long time, I used to kind of feel shame about some emotions, and recognizing that all emotion is actually good. It all comes for a purpose and it's meant to move. The word emotion, when you look at the Latin root, means in motion. It means feelings that are in motion. They're not meant to stay with us. They're not meant to be there forever. We'd probably love to feel happy forever, but it doesn't work that way. Emotions come and they go, and they're meant to flow. And the problems come when we stay stuck in negative emotions and we don't allow them to flow. We don't allow them to be in motion. That's when it really doesn't serve us. Mark, what have you seen?
Yeah, no, I think that even that comment right there, you know, I like to focus quite a bit on understanding your partner. And I think this can provide some of that as well. I think a lot of times we might see our partner, husband or wife, and see that they are angry. And we say, that's not okay. That's not a good thing. Or they're, and this is less common, but maybe they're sad, and that's not a good thing. I do see a little bit more often with that sadness. It's more like, this has become overwhelming for me to deal with. And still, that's not a good thing. You say, they need to let that go. They shouldn't be sad. But I like your point there, Heather, in that these emotions are meant for something. They're really good indicators that something is off. And I think a good question in response to these emotions, you know, once everyone's calmed down and you can think rationally about it, is what do I need to do about this? So, I mean, you were using an example of anger, and I think that's a good example. So if I'm angry, perhaps something that my partner is doing, what do I need to do to change that instead of, you know, just continually spitting out this constant barrage of anger towards someone else. It gets us away from, as you were explaining earlier, kind of that fight or flight or freeze, and a little bit more towards something a bit more productive with these emotions. Now, I've also heard many times that, you know, a kind of this statement that my spouse doesn't listen to me. I'll be honest. I typically hear this from women. My husband doesn't listen to me. All he does is try to give some solutions and doesn't want to hear what's going on. And what I'm getting at here is you need to have room for both. You need to have some of that room for listening, but then it's, as you're talking about moving on, getting in motion, it's that other question is much more important.
Right. And so how do we get in motion, right, with our emotions, especially if we've been feeling really stuck? So the first thing that kind of came to my mind with this is like taking the shame out of negative emotions. So just raise your hand in your own mind or whatever, if you feel like some emotions are bad. How many people are with me? Like, that's a bad emotion. I shouldn't feel anger. I shouldn't feel, you know, resentment. I shouldn't feel sad. I shouldn't feel scared. I shouldn't feel anxious. We have labeled those emotions as bad or unpleasant or unwanted, right? They might be unpleasant. They might be unwanted, but they do come for a reason. I think this happens when we're kids. We're told, you know, you need to control your anger, control yourself, you know, don't feel that way. Don't express to me that I've hurt you. Don't feel pain. You know, you need to lighten up. You're too serious. Why are you always so mopey? Go outside and be happy, right? So we're shamed a lot by the emotions that we feel as young children. And we're taught that I shouldn't feel that way. I need to control myself. I need to be better. If I just didn't feel this way, people would love me more. They would accept me. And anger is bad. I need to try to control it. And so we're taught to have a lot of shame or suppression of these emotions that we feel. But what happens in reality is that what we resist persists. So when we resist feeling anger, then we have a lot of shame about that. We tend to try to bottle it all up inside, try to control it. At least this is what I did. Okay. Try to control your anger, right? Don't let it out. Don't let it control you. You need to control it. And so usually we try to suppress it and not feel it. Well, this has been an interesting experience for me this year because I've actually come to embrace anger, if that makes any sense at all. But I realized after working through things for several years that I never fully let myself feel anger for some of the things that had happened in the past. And so when you talk about being stuck in negative emotion, that defined exactly where I was, right? For years, I felt like I kept suppressing it. I kept feeling, you know, kind of bitter, but kept trying to shove it down, not feel anger because anger is bad. And if I feel anger, then I'm not controlling it. So then I'm bad, right? It's a lot of shame and guilt, which only perpetuates the shame cycle. Mark, you know, the shame cycle. And what we resist persists, right? And so finally my mentor this year said, Heather, with that thing that happened, when that person really hurt you, and this was now going on 17 years, did you really feel angry? Did you express your anger to that person? And I said, no, I'm not supposed to feel anger. I'm supposed to feel compassion. I'm supposed to understand their perspective. I'm supposed to let it go, but I can't, I feel like I can't, I'm just stuck. How do I let it go? And she says, you can't let it go until you finally feel it fully. And so with that, giving myself a space where I could feel it fully and in my mind, kind of going through like a meditation almost, but in my mind, going to that person and expressing how angry I was with them and letting myself feel it fully was the very thing that needed to release that, right? To move it forward, to get the emotion in motion. Because unless we feel it fully in kind of a more productive way, then it tends to simmer inside of us and become very destructive and we stay stuck in it. So Mark, I don't know if you've had any similar things like that in your marriage or in your life. Yeah, so
it's, Heather, I feel like, you know, like, so we work together, but we're different types of people.
Yes.
We've come to realize that over the years working together. So on my end, but even though we're different kinds of people, like this is somewhat similar. It's just coming from a slightly different angle. So in my relationship with Jen, you know, I feel it is sometimes difficult to express some anger or sadness or disappointment or or anything like anything along those lines, because I don't want to trouble someone else. I don't want to bother someone else with something that I'm feeling. And that's kind of been, you know, like, this is then even further, like, this is just what happens in my job. I listen to other people. Other people's feelings are more important. And that's just kind of reinforced daily in my work. And I tend to bring that a little bit home. And Jen and I have actually been working on this as well. We've been saying exactly what you were talking about earlier. It's okay to feel certain things and to share that. And Jen and I both tend to kind of avoid those negative feelings. And it's been interesting letting some of that out in the past couple of years or so. And it's definitely made us much closer, helped us to feel more open. And even though we're not wanting to share all those feelings for different reasons, it's still coming to the same conclusion. It needs to get out there. And I think this is our next kind of idea here, is you do need to feel your emotions fully, and emotions aren't bad. I think a big part of this, much like what you're expressing, what I was expressing, there needs to be room for these emotions to be expressed. I think if we're going to go a step further, if we're aiming at letting go of these things, I think the key word here is validation. Either it's to feel as though our emotions are valued, that they matter. Now, if you're really in an awesome place, I think you can probably do well with saying, with validating your own emotions and taking some space to value how you are feeling. But I think a lot of us, quite frankly, look for that validation from other people. And it's been, like I said, it's been very interesting, Jen and I, to discuss being able to share these emotions and say, hey, look, I just need you to like listen for a moment and say, that matters. And mm-hmm. that's important. And after that, like a lot of that emotion, it's so much easier to let go of it.
Right, it is. I kind of relate it to like anger. Let's like relate it to like a fire, right? The match is lit and now it's burning, and you can either suppress it and let it like simmer inside, or you can let it burn itself out. If you think about any emotion and you think about feeling it fully, first of all, that scares a lot of people, right? Because of the shame thing, and they're afraid of what they're going to do. But if you just sit in pure emotion, I don't know if you've ever done this, but this is an interesting exercise. If you sit in a pure emotion, right? Pure anger, think about how long you can actually feel that fully in its pure sense. Not very long. It's intense and it burns hot and it burns volatile, but it doesn't burn for long. Sometimes, you know, it can burn for a few minutes, maybe even a couple hours, at most a few days if it's pure anger. What happens is that in order to keep that fire going, you'd have to refuel it, right? So some people do that. They feel anger and then it starts to simmer and they're afraid of letting go of the anger. And so they have to bring in more fuel. We talked about that in the story, right? They bring in more fuel to be angry more, be angry more, be angry more, and keep that intensity going. But if you choose to say, okay, here's this thing that happened, I'm going to feel the anger fully about this, and you just sit in it in pure anger and just let it run its course, it will burn itself out as long as you don't refuel it. And so for me, that's like what I had to do. I had to let myself fully feel the anger, say all the things about why it made me so angry to this person in my mind. You know, nothing actually happened in the physical world in my relationship with this person, but I had to say it, and I never said it. And then eventually it burned itself out, because you can't sustain it unless you refuel it. And when you feel it fully, it burns itself out, and then you can move through it. So rather than suppressing it, allow yourself to feel it fully.
This is actually backed with science and neuroanatomy. Mm-hmm. I remember learning you actually can't physically sit with intense emotions for very long. Your brain just doesn't allow it.
Yeah, it takes too much energy.
Really intense problem, like having panic attacks or like high levels of fear about something, it just like you said, if you actually allow yourself to sit with it for a bit and actually feel it fully, it just physically can't continue. I mean, if you do keep revisiting it over and over, you let it die a little bit because you're not feeling it fully, you're not dealing with it, and then you refuel it. Yeah, you can keep that going, but like in any given moment, you can get to a point where you can calm down and then get to that rational mind a bit. Yeah,
exactly. So let's take the shame out of emotions, right? Mm-hmm. For ourselves, validate them for ourselves. I am angry, and that's actually okay. I'm going to feel it fully so that it can run its course and be done instead of simmering under me, inside me, and coming out time and time again in unhealthy ways, right? And let's be really careful about shaming emotions in others. So in a relationship, when our partner says, "This really hurt me," if we immediately shame them, then it's only going to suppress that issue and suppress that emotion in them. Yeah. So just as we want to be, you know, heard, seen, validated, I've got the toddler here, for our emotions, then, you know, we want to be able to give that to our spouse. I'm going to mute myself and go bring her back downstairs, and I'll be back in a bit.
All right, I'll just continue the conversation here. So I think this does lend itself to a discussion of, okay, well, what do we do with this? If we need to be able to feel those emotions to set them aside. I also mentioned, like I said, this idea of validation. And like I said, I do think that many of us seek that validation from others. I think it's really great if you can value your own feelings and opinions and be okay with that. But a lot of us, it's so much easier if someone else has that provides that validation for us. So I think it's important to discuss, okay, well, how do we share emotions in a healthy manner? As I was saying, you know, like this is something that, you know, it wasn't like this huge issue with my wife and I, with Jen and I, but it's something that we have been working on. It was, especially as our children have been getting older, we now have our oldest daughter is almost 14. And many, you know, that these are going to be, it's more emotional times. And it's been interesting as we've been seeing more intense emotion from our oldest daughter. And my wife was really taking that personally. Like, here's some anger or intense sadness from my daughter. And I had to sit with my wife and we had to talk, like, it's okay that she might be upset with us. And it's okay if she's not happy with some of our decisions, which I like for my wife and I, this was like a new thing because our kids are never upset with us. And they're generally very, you know, or if they are, they're toddlers and it doesn't really matter. But now we have like this teenager who's like not happy with our decisions. And it was a kind of a new thing to say, you know, it's okay that she feels like this and we can actually talk to her about that and, you know, be calm about this. And I think that's what really Jen and I have been working on with each other and with our kids is how do we approach emotions with a rational mind and discuss it so that we can have some of that validation in there. That's, I don't know. This is like, I'm not saying that this is what's needed necessarily for everyone, but it's what's been working for us. It's the approaching the emotion with a level head and with lots of validation allows for those emotions to get out there and allows for people to be heard and allows us to move on and actually talk about what needs to be done.
Right. I just feel like someone out there is probably, you know, screaming in their heads or maybe with their mouths at us right now that, you know, well, if you're saying this, then does it just excuse their behavior or, you know, lets them get away with their bad, hurtful things that they're doing to me? And if I let this go, then isn't that just setting myself up to get hurt again? And I think that that's a very valid thing and something that we hear a lot of in And, you know, I've even felt that myself. And so, like with your daughter and with all of us, and your marriage is struggling, your spouse has really hurt you, they've cheated on you, they tell you all these mean, awful things. And we're just like on this side of the the camera here saying, just feel it and then let it go, right? It can sound a little contrite because what happens is these emotions come to protect us from pain, and they come to help us feel safe and prevent us from getting hurt again. And so I just want to throw that out there, that we get that. And when we're choosing to let negative emotion move through us rather than staying stuck in it, it's telling that part of ourselves that says, I'm scared, I don't want to get hurt, so I'm going to hold up this emotion as a shield, as a protection, so that you can't get in here, right? It's telling that part of ourselves, we hear you, we see you, and you're right. We don't want to be hurt again. So we're going to choose to find a new way to protect ourselves. We're going to choose to find a new way to feel safe, to feel empowered, that's going to actually serve us better. So that's a huge thing that I've seen happen with clients that we've worked with, and helping them to put down that, you know, anxiety or fear, that defense mechanism, so that then you can still be safe and protected, but do it in a way that actually serves you rather than causes more harm to you and to the relationship.
I think something that is often said in our podcast and our material, and I want to make this distinction here because we're talking about validation and just letting things go. What we often say is that emotions are always valid. So even if your partner is cheating and they're upset with you, the emotion is valid, even if how they come to that emotion might not be. And it doesn't mean that if I validate the emotion that I'm agreeing that what they're doing is okay. Those are not the same things. It just means that I do need to address that anger or that fear or that sadness, even if I'm also addressing some of my own anger and fear. It's that these emotions, if we say that person doesn't get to be angry because they're cheating, really pushes them further away. They're not going to feel heard. There's going to be no reason for them to reconsider this relationship over here where they aren't understood. What they feel doesn't matter, mm-hmm. when it very much matters to them.
Agreed. That's something I'm learning in my own parenting in this journey, you know, about not shaming them or telling them you can't feel that way, right? It just, that doesn't work. Our parents may have done that unintentionally with us. Our culture may do that. Our society may do that. Our religion may do that, shame us for different emotions. But the bottom line is, to us, like, everything we feel is real to us, right? No matter how we got there. And we need to recognize that our children, our spouse, the way they feel is real to them. So very well said, Mark. You said it way better than I did.
No, I even catch myself sometimes doing that with my kids, saying, no, you can't feel. Like, as an example, like if one of my kids hits the other one and then they're upset that the one that got hit is telling on them and they're really sad. I don't know if you've ever seen that. I have a child who hit someone else and is in tears are streaming down their face because they're going to get told on.
Yeah.
and it's really hard for me to not say no, or say that's okay for you to feel. My reaction is say no, you don't get to feel upset about this.
Did that, yeah.
But you know, it's much easier with, I would say, more rational thinking adults. Maybe not completely rational thinking adults, but more rational thinking adults. It's a little bit easier to say, okay, what you're feeling is okay, and I'm going to try to understand that.
Right.
So even beyond all this, you're saying, I get a lot of clients though that say, I just cannot let go of this. I keep feeling that fire and I keep feeling angry and this distance and this tension. And I do think it's a very real problem, especially when the pain is really intense or there's been a big event in your history. Start carrying along that baggage. And I do think that to be healthy, there needs to be a way to let that go as well. I do think that, much like we've been talking about, being able to get it out there and to express these emotions, to have it validated, is a big step. But what if it's still like, I just can't forget, or I can't let it go? What do we do about that? So I do think that in those cases, you know, sometimes some professional help is good, but, you know, I'm going to talk about like what would be done with professional help. For our programs, for our clients, I tend to lean a little bit towards what's called narrative therapy type exercises. These are typically used for dealing with trauma, dealing with cases of PTSD, where there's been a huge event that someone keeps revisiting over and over again. It's about examining how you are describing what has happened to you and what is going on around you. We tend to, when these things happen, we build up this narrative. You know, if I go into other terms, we build up these beliefs about what has happened. And we do those to protect ourselves. We say, I need to be cautious with other people because they're going to hurt me. We build up this belief that I can't be open or else I'm going to be hurt, or I can't trust my partner. I'm going to be hurt again, or I have to stay angry with them or they won't listen to me. And you need to ask yourself, okay, what am I saying to myself that prevents me from letting go? I don't know if you've had difficulty letting go of things like this. I know, you know, on the short term, I have to do this sometimes myself. I have to say, okay, I'm holding on to some anger with Jen, because Jen and I, we do have fights. I'm holding on to some anger here. What am I saying to myself that's preventing this? And I, you know, it might be Jen isn't listening to me, or, you know, she doesn't understand me. And then I have to say, okay, well, where do I actually want to be with these emotions? And where do I actually want to be in this situation? I actually have to start not like creating a plan of where I want to be. And then I have to start asking myself, is what I'm doing right now, holding on to this, is it actually going to get me there? So this is why it's important, like, to get the emotions out, to feel heard, to try to get some validation so that you can calm down about this and start asking yourself these rational questions. And then even further, you might say, how might I view this in a more healthy way? Other perspectives other ways to look at this that might be healthier. And if you start asking yourself these questions, I don't know, for me, that's very helpful to have a direction to go in, to start examining my thoughts, examining my goals, and actually start saying, okay, how am I going to get there? It makes it much easier to let some of these things go. Now, this isn't the entirety of like narrative therapy type things. That's a whole, like, we could talk hours on that. But it is a bit about examining your story and, you know, planning out a direction to go in. That's kind of like the very basic idea that we go for. So we've had a lot of suggestions. We've talked about several things. I'm just going to do a recap, unless you have something else you want to add, Heather.
Yeah, I'll wrap it all up here. You can recap, and then I'll wrap it up with the how to respond to stress in the moment.
Okay, yes. Oh, yeah, we forgot to. So recap here. Emotion is fine, even negative emotions. We talked quite a bit about that, and we want to take the shame out of those negative emotions, because we do tend to grow up having a lot of shame over emotions, many people. If we're going to let that go, you need to feel it fully and either seek validation, you know, try to get validation for yourself, you know, give yourself value in your own emotions, or try to get, you know, a caring, understanding person to give value to some of those emotions. Once again, invalidation is not saying it's okay how we're reacting, but it's saying feeling that way is okay. And then even further, you know, you want to make sure that you give yourself some time to calm down and are able to approach emotions rationally, so that you can actually go in a good direction. And you need to be a little bit critical in examining how you are thinking things and where you want to be and whether the emotions or thoughts that you're having surrounding those emotions are actually productive.
Yes, that is it. And so I was just thinking, you know, just what was it last week? I don't know, sometime in the last 2 weeks, I had a good friend whose husband actually went through our program, and Mark and I are always very transparent. They ended up in divorce despite, you know, his best efforts to work on saving the relationship. They did get a divorce over the summer. And now our friend here is, he remarried the last couple weeks. And so his ex-wife reached out to me and said, I am just so angry. I'm not supposed to feel angry, but I am just so angry. Can you help me? And first of all, I told her, you know, sometimes it's just not the time to heal that. Like, you're in the moment of it and it's okay. So sometimes we just have to give space that in this moment, I'm not going to feel really peaceful about this. I'm not going to feel forgiving. I'm not going to let it go right now. Right? Because it's not the right time. And so even when you let go of that resistance about the emotion right then, that creates release, right? What we resist persists. So instead of saying, I shouldn't feel angry right now, I should feel forgiving, I should feel charitable, I should feel Christ-like, whatever it looks like to you and whatever story you have about it, you know, I should, you know, think more about his side or whatever. In that moment, it wasn't the appropriate time for her to let that go, to feel forgiving, to feel completely free of this, right? Because it was happening right then. And so rather than resisting it, just allowing it to be and saying, it's okay, I'm angry right now. I'm going to feel it fully. I'm not going to resist it, right? And then when you get to that place where the emotion eventually simmers, right? And eventually burn out, then you can get to that place where you can reframe what's going on, find out, ask yourself some of those questions that Mark was talking about. When we're talking about asking ourselves those very awareness type questions, I don't know, didn't say that very well, but when we're asking ourselves questions that are internally guiding us to have more awareness, right? What am I saying that's preventing me from letting this go? Why is this showing up for me? What is it trying to teach me here? Why do I keep feeling anger over this? What do I want my emotions to be? How do I want to feel about this situation? How do I want to show up in this situation, right? How can I see this in a more healthy way? Those questions do not come from our limbic system, right? They come from the higher reasoning part of our brain. So how do we get to that place, right? If we're in the fight, flight, or freeze response, which is our natural response to stress, like we talked about at the very beginning, how do we get to a place where we can ask ourselves some more, you know, effective questions so we can start to get some more effective answers and solutions to our problem? So we hear about those fight, flight, or freeze response, but there's actually a fourth response to stress, but it's not an instinctual one. It's one that we can learn, and it's called the relaxation response. This is a response that helps us get out of that limbic system, puts us back into the reasoning part of our brain, so that then we can act as a better version of ourselves, a higher version of ourselves, rather than the animalistic lashing out kind of version or retreating kind of version, right? And so the relaxation response is something that you can learn and practice and develop in yourself, so that as soon as you get that trigger, you say, okay, here's that trigger, brain, I'm going into the relaxation response. And you literally train your brain through neuroplasticity, which means our brains aren't fixed. We can change them at any time through repetition and intention. I'm going to take 3 deep breaths right now and put myself into the reasoning part of my brain. I'm going to get out of the fight, flight, or freeze, or whatever that looks like for you. Some people, that's the 3 breaths, and calming that system down, actually deep diaphragmic breathing, which means going all the way down into the lower part of your belly to your diaphragm, actually fuels your brain with more of the anti-stress hormones. and more oxygen, which helps take you out of the limbic system. So that's always a good first response to stress, is taking 3 deep breaths and practicing this. There's some great meditations on YouTube, and there's one that I really recommend. Maybe I'll put it here in the notes on how to practice the relaxation response. So as soon as you have that trigger, it's also something that we teach, of course, in our program, is how do you get out of that fight, flight, or freeze response? How do you get into calm, centered, best version of yourself? And as you practice it, you'll find that you can do it. I'm still a student. I'm not the master, but I've noticed a huge difference in being able to anchor in a relaxation response. So as soon as my 9-year-old gets into her high whiny voice and like emotional shutdown that usually just triggers stress immediately, I'm able to do the relaxation response instead and ask myself, how do I really want to be in this moment? So taking some deep breaths, saying something like a quick mantra to yourself, I am calm, I am loved, I am safe. And then I ask myself, what would the best version of me do right now? Then I just take a few heartbeats and listen to what answer comes and then follow it. That's what works for me, but it looks different for every single person. So I encourage you to find out how you might be able to develop your own spontaneous relaxation response, because we don't always have time to go meditate for an hour or go take a walk or go take a bath or, you know, go talk to a friend or a therapist in the moments of life, in the challenges that we face day by day. And so learning how we can choose a new way to respond to stress, to fear, to anxiety, to hurt, is going to completely change things for you. It just completely changed things for me and many, many of our clients as well. Any final thoughts on that, Mark?
No, I just haven't one, well, kind of. I found in terms of developing new habits with emotions, I have employed this myself and sometimes suggested to other people. I call it cycling, as in practicing feeling an emotion and then like trying to really pull into that emotion and then practicing the direction you want to go with that emotion. Much like you were saying with how our brain works, the more you practice something like that, the easier it becomes. And so if you take time each day to like make that shift, your brain kind of kicks in and says, oh, this is an automatic thing that I want to do. And it becomes easier.
Yeah, I agree. It's called like mental rehearsal. And it's like, it's not the most fun thing to do because we don't like thinking about the things that make us feel negative emotion, but it's actually practicing those triggers in your mind, emotionally feeling that anger, feeling that tension, feeling that fear, whatever it might be, and then practicing the relaxation response, practicing feeling a new way and doing something new. That way, when you encounter it in your day, in reality, your brain says, oh, I know what we're supposed to do now. We used to do this, and instead we're going to do this. It's powerful. Our brains are incredible. They can totally be reshaped if we choose to do it. So
yes.
That being said, there's a lot of hope. If you're feeling really stuck in a lot of negativity, past pain, I encourage you to do what we suggested here, to see if you might be shaming yourself in any way, blaming yourself in any way, suppressing it in any way, allowing yourself in a safe place to feel it fully so that you can let it go and then go into that higher part of yourself, determine who you really want to be, how you want to show up.
I think we might have lost
you. You respond to the world.
We lost you just for about 2 or 3 seconds, but I think we got the thing. I can't help but think, like, as we keep talking about this, you know, the song keeps playing through my head, Let It Go.
Oh, don't say that in my house. Then my 3-year-old won't stop for days.
It's funny how that's still a thing, even years later after the movie. But yeah, especially my younger one still sings songs from it. Anyways,
if you're needing more help with that, and if you're feeling really stuck, like how do I let it go, right? I could sing it, but I'm not going to. Then please reach out to us. Mark and I are here. We can help you with that. All right, marriage mythbuster, Mark.
Yes, the myth: your spouse should meet and fulfill all your needs, or another way to put it, your marriage partner should complete you or make you whole. I think both of these are connected. And I've heard variations on these many times. It's kind of this idea that, okay, we are, you know, this idea like if we're having problems, we're not compatible. And I'll often hear that word in substitution of these things. Like if my partner doesn't make me whole, if they don't kind of fill in those gaps or whatnot, we're just not compatible. And while many times a great and healthy relationship can fill in some gaps or compensate for weaknesses, I think those are wonderful situations. I think the greatest relationships are the ones where each takes responsibility for themselves while actively attempting to support their partner. I'm going to give an example. So the way my wife and I are, we're very flexible people. We're very understanding people. We're very spur of the moment, which means like we can, you know, we're okay with many things. What our strength, both of us, is not is in being very organized and building up routines. We're just not good with that. And what's interesting is we've come to this conclusion. We said, okay, well, we need these routines and we need this organization in our life, but this is not like an area that where we complete each other. And we've said, you know, that's okay. Because we don't have to have that other person. I don't have to, like, even though this is a big weakness, I don't have to have Jen be that person in my life. And why it's become okay is because even though we're recognizing that this is a weakness, we have really tried to take responsibility for this this lack in each of our own lives. This is what is referred to in psychology as, you know, your locus of control. Where does the responsibility for circumstances in your life sit? Basically, if you have more of an internal locus of control, you say, okay, I have control over my own life. I have responsibility for my own emotions. I have responsibility for my own problems. Whereas an external locus of control tends to push out a lot of blame, a lot of criticism. They say, well, we're having money problems in our marriage because my husband or my wife isn't responsible with money. You could say we aren't compatible with that. And, you know, the person who's isn't responsible with money maybe says, well, my spouse should be the one taking care of this. But in general, like I said, and this is just general psychology, it is a much more healthy situation. It's a much more healthy relationship when you can say, here is a problem and how am I going to handle that? What am I going to do to affect this in my life? It's just outcomes are universally much better when you take that perspective. And how, like, we apply this here, like your spouse should meet and fulfill all your needs. Already you are giving a lot of control over the outcome of your happiness, your well-being, to someone else. They control whether you are going to be happy. And just quite frankly, it's going to be impossible for your spouse to not disappoint you if you hold that view. At some point, they are not going to fill in that gap. And there's a lot you can do maybe to work on that and prevent that and to have a really good communication. But at some point, your spouse will disappoint you. You get married, if you're married long enough, it will happen. And rather than approach it with blame, the much healthier approach is taking responsibility for your own needs, your own, making yourself whole in there. Like I said, it's great. It's wonderful. We love a supportive spouse who fills in those gaps. And I think that is awesome. It won't happen on every single point, and it's okay. So that is the myth there that, you know, we were busting today.
It has been busted. And I'm a living example of that. I used to feel that I wasn't good enough unless I got that validation from Ben. And so, you know, even on a deeper level, I felt that need had to come from him until I learned that I needed to find that in myself first. And when I found it in myself, then everything has completely changed.
One more last story, because what you said reminded me of this. I can remember way back when I was a student and I was taking volunteer clients at school. I remember a gentleman came in and he was saying to me, his problem was he kept getting into a series of really terrible relationships that would become verbally or sometimes physically abusive. And what was interesting is at the beginning, he was talking about how he was really unlucky and how all these people controlled his life, and he kept getting in. Why did he keep meeting with these other people? And then I kind of pushed that question back to him and I said, why do you keep getting with these other people? And he kind of just sat there for a second, a little bit dumbfounded, and he had to think for a bit. And these kind of realizations came over several sessions, but he started to think, okay, well, why am I doing this? And we got to this point of like, I'm not validating myself. I'm not feeling okay with myself. And I'm seeking out any sort of approval from anyone else. And when he started taking control of that himself, he didn't need these really abusive relationships anymore. Anyways, it's the same sort of idea, even if that's taken to a much bigger extreme.
Powerful. Well, I encourage you, your call to action today, my friends, is to take action on something you've heard today. Whatever stood out to you the most, whatever you felt resonated with you, or maybe even challenged you a bit, because when you take an action in the step of that direction, then you're going to see some big breakthroughs in yourself and in your marriage. And of course, reach out to us if you're needing more help with that. So thank you, Mark. Next week, we're going to talk about how to have hard conversations. So if you've been having a hard time having hard conversations, you've been putting off hard conversations, they haven't been going very well for you lately, this podcast is going to be for you. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, everyone, for joining us.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.